I read something in a book that it's like, it's not art until you put it out there, right? Like, it's just like drawings in a journal or drawings in wherever until you actually put it out there.
This place existed in my mind, solidified in my mind in some capacity, like a long time ago. Like, I knew this place existed. I knew what I wanted it to look like.
Yeah.
And at first, when you explain that vision, you get some crazy, weird looks and it doesn't get it. Like, now that we're here, it makes sense. Like, oh, yeah, you know, you guys got so lucky you found this place. And I'm like, yeah, it was. There was some luck involved in, in like how it all worked out. But I was looking for it. You know, I was like, it was like when you're looking, see it, get it, like execute on it. And you looked for a long time. So it's, but the vision is even bigger.
Daniel, aka Pooch, taking a break from behind the camera to let you know that this episode is brought to you by BetterHelp, a completely online therapy service designed and suited to all your individual needs. Sometimes things that stay tranquilo can get a little stressful, and we've had our fair share of challenges that we have to get through. And the possibility of having a therapist in our corner can be that factor that gives us a drive, motivation, and determination to keep bringing our vision to life and sharing what we create with all of you. So if you think a therapist might bring you those same benefits, give BetterHelp a try. Just fill out a brief questionnaire on their website and get matched with a licensed therapist today. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/tranquilo to get 10% off your first month today. That's BetterHelp, HELP/tranquilo. And now let's get back to our regularly scheduled program.
What is up, everybody? We are back on the Stay Tranquilo podcast, and we are here with Mr. Adrian Lorenzo, also known as Designed by Adrian, right?
That's right, Designed by Adrian Lorenzo.
So we're here in his studio space, and I want you to kind of give us a little bit of context and background behind the space. I remember when you were building it.
Yeah, you were here
it's
early.
It's come a long way, but before we get into any of that, tell them a little bit about yourself, whatever you want to let the people know, and then we'll definitely get into your story of how this all became.
Sure. I guess the good place to start is I'm an artist, right? Like, I'm now full-time officially an artist. That's what takes up the biggest percent of my time as well as my wife's time. We run this company, Designed by Adrian Lorenzo. We run it together. I do the art. She does the business. We've been doing this full-time for about 5 months now, 6 months almost. And about 4 months in this particular space. So we operated in a more part-time capacity while I was still doing other things, while I was still working in baseball. And we kept growing and growing to where we couldn't really operate in our home anymore. So we were looking for a space. We looked for a long time, and then this lined up. Actually, it lined up as through a mutual contact at Pinecrest Physical Therapy, Chris Altieri.
Shout out to Chris.
Shout out to Chris. great human being and good friend. And I had told him I was on the lookout for something like Pinecrest, kind of, a space, like a warehouse type of space.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that this was down the street, and it opened up, it lined up, and it was perfect, right?
Like, I mean, to be honest, you can't ask for a better space.
I
mean, the flow of it, the kind of like the accessibility of what you have upstairs in that little loft space is sick.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
And, you know, we'll get into what other, you know, projects that you're going to do. But for everything that you want to accomplish in this, you know, I saw this. I'm like, dude, this is a magical spot.
Thank you, man. You could do
a ton with it. But I want to rewind before we get into everything, right?
Sure.
So when you were a kid, was art something that you were, you know, were you doing art? Like, was that something that from like a young age you were always kind of drawing stuff?
I knew I had a way to look at the world that was like, I was intrigued by colors and visual things. And the first time I saw like Aztec drawings and like Keith Haring kind of stuff, like I was drawn to it. But my grandmother is probably the first place that it all starts. My grandmother was an artist.
Okay.
She found it. I'd say she was always an artist, but she started painting more once she, like, close to retirement, and after retirement, she started painting a lot more. And I was around for a lot of that. So I was always intrigued. She painted like Cuban landscapes and more realism kind of things. Some abstract work, and those are the stuff that I was gravitated towards, that I liked, but not much. I actually have, there's a lot of her paintings in here and a lot of her stuff in storage back there. She painted voluminously, like hundreds of paintings.
Awesome.
So that's where like my interest was piqued, I'd say. And then, you know, I would doodle here and there, but I don't know, playing baseball in Miami growing up, like if you're playing baseball, you're doing the circuit, you know, you're doing the travel ball, you're doing the international, the Boys and Girls Club, wherever here, there. So you're Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you know, you're doing practice
your
or games.
Your time is consumed in that world.
And if you're serious about baseball and you graduate to go play high school baseball, which I did at Belen, and I took it seriously there. And like, if you're serious about it, it just has a way of dominating your life, dominating 100%. Your time in a good way at the time, but just didn't give space for really anything else. So like art was never really able to flourish. And then I stayed in baseball after I stopped playing in college. I stayed in baseball for another 12 years after that. So it wasn't until recently that the art got to like blossom and flower. Yeah,
because like you said, baseball almost became that priority in your life. And there was obviously a love and an enjoyment of the game, you know, while you were in high school and beyond that. But to your point, it not only does it consume your actual physical time, but it, you know, the mental capacity that it goes into. You're not really thinking about anything else. Yeah. When you're so, you know, focused and invested into something that you believe has a vision and a purpose later on in life, right?
For sure.
Not necessarily knowing exactly where it's going to take you, and it ended up taking you down, I think, for the avid baseball fan, a cool path, right?
Thank you, man. Yeah.
But for you, art wasn't the main focus, and here you are now doing art, right?
Yeah.
So you played baseball, then you started working in baseball. You worked with the Marlins. What did that world look like, and what were you actually doing with the Marlins during that time?
So it's a little bit of a roundabout path to get to the Marlins. I kept playing. I went to, from Belen, I went to play baseball at the University of Pennsylvania. So I went to Philly.
Okay.
So I spent 4 years in Philadelphia, played my college ball there, took baseball very seriously, got my playing time there, but you know, like every player reaches a playing ceiling, like a tool ceiling, and I kind of hit mine in college. And I still had a fire and a passion to, like, you know, I had that athletic drive in me still, so I wanted to stay working in the game somehow. And the first thing that opened up was an internship at a sports agency out in Los Angeles, a company called Wasserman. They're a major company now in the sports representation industry. And that's where I got my first start in baseball. And then after that came an internship with the Boston Red Sox, then came another internship with the Boston Red Sox, and I ended up spending 6 years with the Boston Red Sox total time. Yeah. I got there in 2013, and
That's
I got there
a great
in 2018.
Organization.
Yeah, I got there in 2013. We won the World Series, and then the last year I was there in 2018, we won again. So it was like a really cool era and chapter in my life. I worked multiple positions on the major league staff, but ultimately ended up helping run Latin American operations with the Red Sox. So I was like running around Latin America, scouting and finding players, scouting, signing.
So more on like the player development, prospecting side.
Sure, signing. So scouting would be the signing portion, and then development being once you've already signed them, like the development portion. So with the Red Sox, dipped my hands in a lot of scouting and a lot of player development on the Latin American side.
Interesting.
And traveled, I don't know, anywhere baseball's played in Latin America, probably multiple times, a lot of Dominican, a lot of Venezuelan. A lot of trips to Colombia, Mexico, Panama, Curacao, Aruba. Like I said, anywhere baseball's played in Latin America, we've been there and we've covered it thoroughly. So I did that with the Red Sox, 2 years covering Latin America primarily. And then an opportunity opened up when the new ownership group with Jeter came over, and Bruce Sherman came over with the Marlins. And that's where I come over with the Marlins.
Got it.
But really more in like a, I don't know, jack of all trades kind of capacity. The title was ambiguous, and I kind of worked in all sorts of different departments. But then ultimately with the Marlins, ended up gravitating towards the Latin American space again here with the Marlins. And that's what I ended up doing most recently with them, was running their anything Latin American operations, scouting operations.
Okay.
So the better part of 2 years, I oversaw that department.
Got you.
So.
Yeah, I mean, baseball, when you talk about just the Latin American presence in the game is absurd. I mean, it's pretty much Puerto Rican, Dominican, Venezuelan, and then kind of a floating mix of a lot of other, but I mean, some of the best players obviously come from Latin American spaces. Yeah. So shows why there's such an investment in the game. I remember when I went to the DR, right out of the airport, I think we flew into, was it Santo Domingo, I think. Right out of the DR, I think it was the Cleveland Indians had their massive training facility there.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
So it's like, you
see
that.
Marlins isn't too far from there.
Yeah, and then you hear that there's basically every team's got something there.
All 30 have one. Some Japanese clubs have academies in,
really?
in the Dominican Republic as well. Yeah. I mean, look, Latin America, it's if you divided it up into a pie right now and major leaguers, the number looks like 30-something percent of major leaguers are from Latin America. But in the minor leagues, I think that number's closer to 50 and growing. So that number, to me, is growing. And culturally, I think the impact of Latin American baseball players is becoming more, you know, more prominence.
Yeah.
We're seeing it a lot more. And I think the game's only growing in one direction, and that's more growth, and that's more Latin America, more followers, more viewership. So
and growing it through those avenues. Yeah, I agree. What so you were in baseball for 12 years. What was, I guess, your favorite memory or favorite aspect of working in that space?
Wow. The day-to-day team building aspects of it. So like, especially early on with the Marlins, when I first got to the Marlins, it felt like a blank canvas to introduce ideas and team building concepts and minor league free agents and building on the fringes of the roster and trying to build an organization from the studs, right? Like build the farm system up, build Latin America up, like have your amateur scouting process tightened up and so that you're a better drafting team and things like that. It was, I'd say comprehensively, that was the more exciting time, but there's, you know, the moments where you actually, where it comes together and you win. So people don't, you know, the 2020 Marlins season, for example, we go to the postseason for the first time in like 18 years or 17 years or something like that.
Yeah.
Just clinching to get to that point, given the roller coaster that was that 2020 season.
Oh, yeah.
And how many transactions we had to get through, all that. I don't care that it was 60 game season. Like, it was a that felt like a big accomplishment. And then going to beat the Cubs in the first round of that series, the Cubs won their division like comfortably. Like, so that was an even further. It's a shame that that didn't get to get enjoyed outside of the bubble that it was in.
Right.
You know, it was just a weird like, COVID time.
Exactly.
Yeah. But that whole year, I think anybody that was part of that roster, that Marlins bubble.
Enjoyed the hell out of it.
Not only enjoyed it, but it was just a very special run. And that, you know, felt like the culmination of a lot of different experiences in baseball. But there's a lot of good moments.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. I mean, between, I'm sure you've connected, obviously, with a lot of amazing people during your time there. And I think that's something that you've kind of almost been able to tie with your art and you know the connections you've made in baseball. But before we get into the art, I have to ask you the question because we got a lot of Marlins fans on the shows between this show and the sports podcast we do. But what is your point of view on not necessarily the current situation? Obviously, the current situation is a little bit sticky and messy right now, and there's a lot of factors going into it considering you're missing your two best starters in the rotation. And just, it's baseball, a lot of things can happen, right? But one of the big problems is, one, getting fans into the stadium, right? That's that's been a problem now for a while now. And then obviously the product on the field, in my opinion, has improved, but here we are and we feel like we took a couple steps backwards, which was expected, in my opinion. I didn't have high expectations, maybe not as low as what has happened so far. But what in your opinion, I guess, it being in the baseball space, has kind of been the biggest problem with the Marlins and why they haven't been able to fill the stadium and kind of just build a brand around the Marlins, right?
That's a really, really nuanced, comprehensive question that doesn't have a simple answer.
Yeah.
And it's one I've spent a lot of time not only thinking about, but actively going through the motions of trying to, like, okay, this is a problem. We think we could improve it via this route.
Mm-hmm.
You try to go down that route, and for X, Y, or Z reasons, there are multiple complications. And it turns out that in the city of Miami, like, there are layers of complications, like, including, like, complications with the city and the stadium and who owns what and who has, like, this property and what you can do with the adjacent properties next to the stadium. If you look at the first level of the Marlins, like, the parking garages, there's one subway and there's one, like, healthcare center, and everything else is just barren, and it's been like that forever. And so there's things that are connected to the development of the area that make it complicated to really build like an environment around
what's it called,
like the Battery in Atlanta.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
They have like an area there.
I think that there's genuine efforts to try to do these things, but there's more roadblocks than people think.
Okay.
And I don't know whether they're political or zoning or what they may be.
It's
but
good to know
more,
because that's the first people allude. It's like, why can't they develop that area to make it for people to do?
And there have been attempts. You know, there's been a brewery that's attempted to be there. There's been a few, like, attempts, but I see where there are roadblocks there, too. So that's just, like, a setting and area, right? We haven't gotten to the organization.
Which plays a large portion into getting people to just even think about going to a game.
I think, Miami, we've seen a growth in Miami in terms of options of things to do and things to entertain you while you're here. But we've also seen a population explosion. So, we should have seen some rebound in terms of how often and how much people go to games.
Right.
And you would say, well, there's no interest for baseball here. The World Baseball Classic.
Exactly what was going to be my next
Not only
point.
The World Baseball Classic, but the Serie del Caribe also proved that, like, and not all of those fans are traveling in to see that. Some, but I would say 60 to 70% of those fans were here.
Exactly.
You know, so how do you rally that group and it's
plus
complex.
That's a way more expensive game to go to. A World Baseball Classic game is gonna, you know, especially if you're sitting lower bowl, is gonna cost you some dollars.
Very much so, huh? So, and these are all things that we haven't even gotten into the baseball and operations and decision side of things yet, you know, because that's the closest look that I've gotten. Mm-hmm. But I think there are complications on the outskirts that are like that are connected to the baseball problems, because you want to see people in the stands, you want to see people get there, but there's also, like, if you've gone there, you'll notice, like, you can get there at 6:30 or 5:40, whatever, and the game's at 6-something, and you're ready, you got there, and now you're 40 minutes outside because the lights aren't synced up around, and so it's like, there are complications, but, again, I know there are people, good people in good faith fixing those things, but it's just, where it's located is complicated, so that's one layer.
Okay.
On the baseball side of things, it seems like there's just a continuous ebb and flow to the Marlins organization in particular, right? And we're in this, like, kind of lull downwards when you're trying to build up the organization from the ground up again. So, like, we've kind of gone through various cycles of this. I came in at the beginning of a previous cycle and watched that build up into a, you know, you have to almost, when you have that build up, you have to hit that success at the big league level. And it happened in 2020, and then you faltered in 21 and 22. But, like, you have to not falter there in order to get the keep the good faith from the group and the momentum and all that to kind of push it forward.
Yeah.
And then this group, for example, we went to the postseason last year. But you can argue that, like, we had a good regular season run, got to the postseason, and then the postseason showed us the gap in, like, not talent level, but roster level, depth of roster.
Missing Sandy, you know, in a wild card series, and then Yuri too. In a basically, you're going against their 1-2 in the beginning of the series. It's going to be hard to win. But that just shows, to your point, there's a gap in your rotation. One, and then do you have a good enough lineup to kind of fill the void when you don't have your ace on the mound?
Right.
Which,
and the Phillies were just really good.
Yeah,
like they were hot. They were good. They were deep. Like Wheeler dealt, Nola dealt.
Exactly.
Like, it's just like we ran into a buzzsaw there. Mm-hmm. As much as momentum as we had.
Yeah.
And I think, but those are good. Those are instructive. They're like, okay, you can get to the postseason, but this isn't about getting to the postseason only. This is about, like, sustainable winning in the postseason. I think Mike McDaniel said it on a podcast. He's like, you don't want to go to the postseason and get your ass kicked. Like, you want to go and be there and belong. And I think that when the Marlins sat there and assessed the current state of things, they didn't feel they were one or two or three moves away from where the Phillies are or where that grouping of teams are. So you have to take a real look at yourself and decide, like, is this our window? Do you push and hit with this window? And then when the injury bug also hits you hard, because it hit them, it squared them up. You know, it squares you up with Sandy. It squares you up with Yuri. You know, and it hit him with Max Meyer. It just kind of, like, you got decimated in a short amount of time. That's why you can never have enough pitching, right? It hits you in waves.
Even Lizardo now is on the IL right now.
So what happens then? It puts all the pressure on the picks and the things that you did to hit on a really high level. Some do, some don't.
Right.
And that's where the fans could be like, oh, well, you need to do, you know, hit better on these draft picks or signings or whatever. And great, they're right to have that. But what I'm saying is, like, they made the determination that this isn't, you know, kind of that window to push in. So what it feels like they're doing to me, and what I would tell fans that seems like a genuine effort, is they're building this thing in a thorough grassroots way that there have been efforts to do before. But I've seen an increase in hiring to, like, really staff this thing the way an organization, like, you know, the Rays come up as a model a lot.
Because of
similar payrolls, right? So Peter Bendix gets hired. But,
exactly.
So similar payrolls, but staffing
vast differences in the way these organizations are staffed. And so I think they've been a recent increase in a lot of staffing. And so I think you're gonna see the benefits of all those investments. They just might not be right now.
Yeah.
And as it relates to the current, like how things are going on this roster right now, I don't think anybody sitting there on that major league club is gonna tell you things are breaking the way that they want them to.
Yeah.
Right? So like, that's rough. Like even with, you know, the injuries, I don't think you predicted or you projected to break this way. So I feel for those guys going through it that way.
The record also doesn't justify
it's too early too.
How they've played even to this point.
Right.
You know, they've had a lot of leads, they're scoring runs. Then when they're not scoring runs, they've had the good pitching and it's just they haven't been able to get both clicking at the same time in same games. And that's the game of baseball, and those will stack up the more you kind of play that game.
Yeah, I would say that what stands out is the volatility of a bullpen, right? Like a bullpen is like last year when you're on the good side of it, they ride you to close games and close victories, and guys look really good and are dominant. And when that gets on the other side of that, not luck line, but on the other side of that line, like now everything, all your problems get magnified.
Right.
Now you're not scoring runs. Now close games like that you used to win. So it's...
Well, last year, I think we were number one in one-run games. Yeah. So, we were walking on that fine line last year, but we were on the other side getting a lot of those wins. Here we are, not necessarily in a lot of close games. We've been in close games, but that just shows like there was a gap there. Even last year, I think I forget how many games above 500 we were, but our run differential was in the negatives, right? Like to me, that always tells you a little bit of a sign. It's like, you guys are good, but you're a little bit on the fraudulent side of things.
I would call it more like you're on the like a luck factor, right? Like you're catching the breaks as opposed to not, right? That pitch that goes in the dirt that the catcher blocks and gets past him, or the one that stays in front of him.
Right.
That's like sometimes it comes down to catch that break, you win, catch lose, not, and you don't. You know?
Yeah.
So
they're
on the rough side of that right now, and they had good mojo going last year. So
I think that's what pisses off the fans the most.
Yeah, but I think last year they were on the good side of that run differential, right? Or they were on the lucky side of that thing. So like they got into the playoffs, rode that mojo, good momentum.
Mm-hmm.
I think it corrected significantly this year, and we're seeing some of that. But
they
got a lot of exciting young players, man.
They do.
You could go on any given night and watch. You know, especially like when Yuri was healthy, like you can go and watch a really fascinating starter, whether it be Max Meyer, Luzardo, or I mean Yuri on a given night. Like the future to me is still bright. Like
100%.
Sandy under control for a long time. Just regardless of whatever decisions they make, trading and things like that, I think good things are happening and there's a bright future. And zooming out, right? I've been thinking about the Marlins a lot lately and chronicling them. And how many organizations don't have two championships in a span of this amount of time, right? The Rangers just won their first one in 63 years, you know? So, like, some perspective in terms of it doesn't always equal automatic, like, top-tier team every year. And I think that there are reasons to be optimistic and stay a fan. I'm not the type that, like... I think you ride with your regional team no matter what.
I mean, I think that's the epitome of being a Miami sports fan, you know, dealing 100%. With the Dolphins, dealing with 100%. The Marlins. I mean, Marlins were on the opposite side where they started right when they came out, you know, hot, you know, two championships within the first 8 years, which is pretty incredible to your point.
But the frustration is valid, right? Like if you're a Marlins fan or if you're even a Marlins employee or somebody working there, like,
it is frustrating.
Like the frustration is valid from the point of the fan. And I think that the fan only wants that to be acknowledged. And still, like, we still move forward. Like, we haven't been winning Super Bowls with the Dolphins every year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
right?
Here
like,
we are.
You still, like, every year you get that hope and you get that itch, right? And I think
the Dolphins do a great job of selling hope is what they do.
Right. I think that maybe Marlins fans are due for, like, I don't want to call it a reset because it's not really fair like that, but just a... Enjoy the youth of the team. Enjoy having like a young building team. And I think there's hope and optimism there. But the frustration is for sure valid.
For sure. And I think also the aspect with the owner right now where he doesn't like to spend the money, right? And I think that's infuriated a lot of fans too. But then again, like Moneyball is like the perfect epitome. And we've seen the team succeed with it. The Rays being that, you know, one of those examples where you don't necessarily have to go out there and splash because look what the Mets did last year. One of the highest payrolls in the league. And I don't even think they made the playoffs last year.
There isn't a direct correlation between like
just
payroll
because you go and pay, right?
Yeah.
The Padres did the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a mess. And that basically completely fell apart. You know, the Yankees obviously have always been money spenders. The Red Sox usually spend money too. But like to your point, there's not a direct correlation. And I think fans are in kind of a la la land almost. It's like, sure, we got to go spend, but doesn't necessarily prove to be a winning recipe, right, on the field.
Yeah. So I guess what I'll say to that is, like, Tampa Bay, right? We can go back to using that example. Yeah. Low payroll, high wins. But again, I think they're well out in front on processes, like processes that they put into place 8 to 10 years ago that they're bearing fruit from now. I think the Marlins are going through evolutions of maybe year 4 or 5 of that 10-year process to where your processes yield long-term results.
Right.
Right. So, like, and we've kind of ripped the Band-Aid and started over a few times. So that starts the clock over again a couple times. And I think it feels with the injection of hiring and things like that that they're doing now, it's like an injection into the infrastructure so that you yield those results in the future. But, you know, how long in the future that is,
who knows? I mean, the Orioles
tough
did
to
it.
Tell. Yeah, the Orioles, they wore it for a few years.
They wore it, yeah.
You know, they wore it. So, but the Marlins fans have also been wearing it.
Yeah.
So it's...
patience as a fan.
It's tough. I get it.
You got to keep supporting your team. That's all it comes 100%, down to at the end of 100%. The day. But all right, that's enough baseball talk. Let's get into some of the art.
Sure.
All right, so your abstract,
yep,
kind of approach to the art has obviously been, I think, your brand, essentially, right? Can you talk about the inspiration behind it? I think you kind of alluded to it a little bit when you said you were a kid. You were big into, like, the Aztec and the Mayan. Is that, yeah, some of the inspo behind it?
You know, it's hard to say that it's directly inspired. Like, mm-hmm, I do it because of this. Like,
right.
I think that I draw inspiration from the things I see in the world, okay, period. So, but the lines they're just something that come from either inside of me or outside, right? Like, it's just something, it's hard to explain. They come out in, you know, a fit or in, like, a manic way of in the moment, right? Like, my stuff is very journalistic in that way. So, like, that painting over there, it could be a depiction of whatever was happening on that day in my,
right,
life. Because while I don't write, you know, I don't sit there and write things, mm-hmm, this is my journal, you know? Like, so any given, and I work fast, so I work in the moment. So most of it is an expression of what happened on that moment.
Gotcha.
But to tell you exactly what each of the individual symbols, which is what I,
right,
call them, what they mean, they're not attached. Like, I don't, okay, now this means this and now this has to get put there. No, it's more, I'm in more of a flow state and in the moment when these lines come out.
Is it a feel thing? Is it more of a visual thing? So when you're expressing what you, yeah, put on the canvas, right?
Sure.
Is it something that you're thinking about? Is it something more that you're feeling and then expressing it through painting? How does that approach look like for you?
It's a combination of both, right? Like, there's a visual component, there's a depth component, there's,
right,
a balance. So, like, you look at a square canvas or a rectangular canvas, and there needs to be a composition, a balance. There's a balance to every painting that artists know about this. Like, you either get it right or you don't, right? And I need to try to factor multiple things in. And so I can't work in one corner and work outward. I have to,
okay,
like, bounce from one corner,
gotcha,
to the other. And my style lends itself to live painting. Kind of the way I paint live is the way I paint anyway.
Okay.
So it could be performative, and it's, I don't know, man. I don't know what's working through me in that moment for this to come out, but,
right,
something.
It's
almost like
somewhere.
I plug into this, and this is what comes out.
Oh, it's cool, because, like, I'm sitting here, and I'm kind of, like, looking at it. And I mean, I think this is always, like, the cool thing about art. You're never going to be able to get in the artist's mind completely, right? But maybe you can garner, like, a few things out of it, right? And I see, like, crowns in a couple of these.
Yep.
Like, that seems to be, like, a pretty consistent thing.
Yeah.
A couple houses.
Yeah, the crowns is Basquiat. So Jean-Michel Basquiat is very much, like, one of my favorite,
you know,
top five artists. The Mount Rushmore, you know.
Okay.
Inside the route, Mount Rushmore of artists, if I were to put one.
Okay.
And the crown was just a, you know, it appears a lot in his paintings. And it's not like, oh, I want to put that in there because it'll remind people of, no, it's just a, I don't know, musician sample, you know, things from the past all the time.
Right.
I kind of look,
yeah,
at,
yeah,
it similarly,
100%
right? Like,
that's a good way to look at it.
Whether it be an homage or just like, yes, it's an influence.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know, it feels appropriate, so it goes in. It's,
yeah,
it's really as simple as that.
Fair.
I don't think
that's
it
fair.
Too much past that.
Yeah.
But it comes from Basquiat for sure.
Cool. One of the things that I wanted to ask you, because I always like to kind of get the perspective when people will take leaps of faith in life, right? And I know this was a bit, I'm not going to say I know, but I'm going to assume that this was a pretty big leap of faith,
yeah,
considering,
yeah,
you know, you had a career in baseball and all that awesome stuff.
Yeah.
But in the process, because when you were in baseball, you were already starting the artwork.
Yes.
And the artwork obviously started catching fire and you started getting a lot of gigs. But can you talk about that transitional phase, right? And what was kind of like the thought process of like, damn, I'm going to do this?
Yeah, yeah. Amanda's in here somewhere laughing and smiling because of this this process.
Yeah.
I guess maybe from the outside looking in, it might seem like an like a sudden shift, but it was really like a 2-year slow pull of the Band-Aid. I guess the first step I took was to like start an Instagram page and put stuff out there. I read something in a book that it's like, it's not art until you put it out there, right? Like it's just like drawings in a journal or drawings in wherever until you actually put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
And something about that like kind of challenged me. You know, and sometimes I get competitive that way where I'm like, no, I'm gonna get this, you know, and so I started the Instagram account and that started the process. Right. And then I started making more and more work. But, you know, baseball, especially working in baseball operations, it's very much a full time 24/7 job. And like a lot of my job working in international or Latin America was literally my feet had to be in another country sitting there watching to do my job. So I tried to balance both, but baseball always won. Like if you have to like, whatever pays the bills is what wins the binary decision.
That's usually the case.
You know, to your point, as this started growing, so I started to like get more live painting and book gig here, Art Basel won. How do we, you know, work around the work schedule?
Mm-hmm.
I started to have to make a lot of like one versus the other decisions. And again, you make the professional decision. This is your job. You know, so you decide on in that direction, but it started to get tougher and tougher because it started to grow more and more on the art side. And it just reached a point where, you know, I felt like my contributions to baseball and to the game of baseball, we had signed a lot of players. We had given a lot of opportunities. Like, I felt like we had hired a lot of people, given people a lot of opportunities and still maintained relationships with all those people. Like, I felt like I'm good with my contributions to this point. I want to see what I can do if I give this art thing my full time and attention.
Okay.
Like I want to see what giving this my full bandwidth can do, because I felt like that's what was holding it back the most, right? And so
you're giving 20% to something that you felt deserved to give, you know, 100% of
your time. Yeah, and I didn't, you know, I honestly didn't quit, right? Like it was just like the natural end of my contract. Like it was October 31st of last year, and I just gave some advance notice that like, hey, my career outside of baseball is moving in this direction. And like, you know, I'd like to make sure that everybody here keeps a job, like all the people in my staff, like don't, you know, that my decision doesn't impact them in a negative way, and players that are coming behind them, the same thing. So I had to do a lot of, there was a lot of work that had to be done in the phasing out process to make sure everybody stayed in a good spot and that I could feel good about walking away from that without like just being like, hey, peace guys, gotta go.
Mm-hmm.
And so that took a lot of time. So it was like a really slow pull of the Band-Aid, especially because the art things kept getting bigger and bigger. So Art Basel 2 was like a much bigger 4-day thing with 4 shows. And the first time we did it, it was like one, you know, small thing. So it was like, it got harder and harder to do both. So I had to, you know, I'm not the type of person that I need to be all in on what I'm doing. So,
yeah, I feel that.
But it's interesting. Baseball hasn't fully let me go, but working as a baseball executive, working as an executive for a major league team, I didn't see both surviving that way. And I wasn't ready to let the art fade or die at this point. So this won out, and this is what we're doing, and this is what we're chasing. But baseball's everywhere still.
So. No, of course. And I think it's such a big part of your life that it'll never not be a part of your life at some capacity, you know?
And I don't want that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you still have a love and a passion for it. I don't think those things ever die, but you saw a larger purpose and you saw it in your art and the people, you know, like your audience and your I don't want to call them customers, but
clients,
kind of
customers,
right? Partners. Collectors. Yeah, exactly. They also showed that, what you're doing and is like, I feel like that's always kind of almost a telltale sign, like if you are onto something because it's being well received by other people, right? Because your ego is always going to get in the way and you're always going to think you have the best idea, you know? Mm-hmm. Which not to say you don't have the best idea, but it always does take maybe a little bit of validation throughout that process of making that transition. It's like, am I making the right decision?
Sure.
And you're never going to know that, right? No. But it does take a little bit, I think, of like that leap of faith, but also a little bit of like, hey, I like what you're doing.
No
and
doubt.
That gives you enough to be like, you know what? Let's do this.
Yeah, I refer to it as momentum a lot. And it's like, mm-hmm. like, how do you gain conviction in what you're doing? And you need momentum into that jump into the unknown, right?
Yeah.
So you need to kind of like jump and gain momentum into it. And it's like things like the first people that give you jobs, you know, the first people that like, even they're small, right? Like the first people that say, hey, I like your stuff. I want to do something about it. Like, I remember all those people, like those are like OG collectors and OG like clients of mm-hmm. yours, because they like, or the people that have been getting our newsletter. We're like 20 volumes into our newsletter that we started from the beginning, and
That's cool.
Who got it at the beginning and like have seen the journey from that point. And like, those are all momentum. Or like, you know, Ron and Chris at Pinecrest, mm-hmm. you know, like I have a couple murals up there. Like
yep.
the people who give you your first opportunities give you momentum to get that, like for validation. So you have conviction, like, all right, mm-hmm. I can do this. And like, here we go. But like, I don't know that it ever gets to more than 50%. Like,
yeah.
I don't know that you get to 51% and be like, all right, we got majority.
It yeah.
feels like
it's a
30 max. And you're like, the rest is like 70 that you just jump.
Yeah.
So I would say, but once you do, it's kind of amazing. Like, if you just trust it, man, and you're following something you're legitimately passionate about.
Right. I think that's the biggest
thing.
Like,
if you find that thing that you can just hammer out as, this is the thing that I love.
Yeah.
Or multiple things. It doesn't have to be one, as I'm seeing, right? Like,
man,
I was like forcing my way into art, and now baseball is kind of, you know, around in another interesting way that I mm-hmm. never even considered. But
yeah.
like, I'm passionate in both those directions. And I think that's what is yielding, what feels like is yielding results, because I'm able to be authentic in both those directions, because it's what I'm actually,
yeah.
you know, hyped up about.
Yeah. I mean, I always look at it, it's like there's like the seasonalities of life, right?
Interesting. Yeah.
And, you know, one season you're doing something, another season you're doing something else.
Yeah.
Yet every season that you've gone through doesn't mean that it's one and done,
right?
There's always like kind of like a blend between the seasons,
sure.
right? Between spring and summer, there's
yeah.
still a little bit of spring within summer. And then
the cyclical
with summer,
nature to things,
and there's always like, going to
come back
around.
Like, you know, this series over here was a series of three paintings, right? And the one that the empty space over there,
mm-hmm.
I made those paintings maybe like 2 years ago. And then for F1, an opportunity just came up through, like, shout out to Victor Gosa and Marinello Designs, who like kind of put this together. They create these printouts of like the F1 car
yes,
shape.
Yes, I did
you
see
saw?
That.
Like,
yeah,
I posted
yeah.
some stuff about
mm-hmm.
it. And so they came with these backings, right? And I, so I spray painted the car. I did a design on the car, and I was going to use the backing that came with it. But I was like, oh, I looked around and I just saw a canvas that fit right. And I just put two things together. Mind you, it's a 2-year-old piece, you know, and like, I don't really paint in that style anymore, but like, it just kind of got remixed in. And that was just an example from yesterday.
Yeah.
But that kind of thing happens all the time. And the different
that's
buckets
pretty cool.
to pour myself into, sometimes that's good too for me. You know, I actually have like 3 or 4 of those buckets. So like, I can't paint in one style for 3 days straight, you know? So that's why you'll see multiple styles. Like
yeah.
this is a little more
mm-hmm.
drippy and Jackson Pollock-y, you
gotcha.
Know, kind of. And I need to do that in order for the other stuff to stay fresh
yeah,
and focused
yeah.
and not like, not get bored of it, you know?
Yeah.
So they feed each other in this interesting way, which I didn't think about before.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
it's cool how the mind works.
Yeah.
What was your biggest fear when you made that choice to become an artist?
Money.
Yeah.
it's like, well, it's money because it's.
It is.
It's just a reality of life. Like, we're about to have. We're about to have a little girl
mm-hmm.
coming up here soon, and you know, it's. We live in Miami, and you know
yep.
what's. You know what that means nowadays, and what that costs nowadays. So like, that's. I'd be lying if I said that wasn't first and foremost, but it was also the thing you have to. It's like the obstacle you have to like just. Have faith in that it's going to work, that part's going to work out.
I agree.
You know, and that part, the score is going to take care of itself if your processes are good.
That's the hardest part
yeah,
about it, right?
Because
obviously we have a level of control with it.
Yeah, yeah.
But there is a level of
not
having that control,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because when I look at money like almost like as it's a tool, it's a currency, obviously, it's an energy,
yeah.
right? And it's a form of trade, right? And it comes in the form of time,
yeah.
effort, energy that you put out, yet it's going to be coming from somebody else, right?
Yep.
And you don't necessarily have the control over the decisions that other people make. And that's where the lack of control when it comes to the monetary aspect of things comes in, right? Where you can control your output, you can control your efforts, you can control your motivations and things like that, right? Yet you know and you believe so much in your craft that the money will come.
And it
does, because why? It goes back to exactly what you were saying before. You're following almost your passion and your purpose, that those things kind of naturally kind of unfold in ways that you don't even imagine.
And that's the part you got to be comfortable with. It's funny. I was just talking about that today with Amanda.
It's uncomfortable to try to do that.
You can have this plan or this vision, and like, as long as you're working hard in a good direction, like, and you're open to how it manifests or how it actually comes together, like, you'd be surprised how many opportunities are floating around there. And to me, it's just been, I've been rewarded at every attempt. You know, every time I actually chase the authenticity and chase like going after what I actually want to do and create just to create, the other part like finds a way to work itself out. And that's been, it's been my favorite part of it. But look, at the end of the day, like the support I get, especially from my wife and what we do here together is just like, you can't do that. You can't take that jump. Like there's certain parts where I feel like I'm the one with a little more of the doubt. And you see that she's like looking at you like supportive, like we can do this. We like the money, don't let that be the obstacle. And that's enough to like get over that hump. And once you do, you know, you once you get over that fear, you realize it's not as scary as you think. And for me, I've learned that like, you know, when you're you have a full-time job, you're making a regular salary, like you get a little
comfortable.
You get comfortable. And so now I've had to be a little more like lean and hungry and figure out angles and work out like how it's gonna come piece together.
Yeah.
But that's just that's only resulted in me looking at the problem differently. It hasn't become like a bigger problem.
Right.
You know, it's just like I gotta figure this out a little bit differently. And starting a business has been really fascinating. Like, so the ins and outs of like starting an LLC and filing your taxes as a business now and all the deductions and things you could do through business lines of credit. And it's just like
it
that part's been
doors.
Kind of fun and fascinating to figure out too. So
well, it's crazy how much you learn when you kind of just put yourself in the unknown, right? Because it's like, I don't know any of this. I wasn't taught any of this, but I'm going to put myself and just figure it out along the way, you know, like, I studied exercise science my whole life. I played baseball my whole life. And I, never in a million years did I ever think I would ever get into this world, you know? And I've been doing this now for 4 years, and I love the shit out of it.
Yeah, you can tell, man. It comes out. Like, you bring that energy. It comes out. That's
awesome. But then again, it's like one of those things, I don't stop thinking about it.
Right.
Like, I think about this shit 24/7. You're
gonna
ask
him,
you
know, right?
There's times where
that's
I'm out with him.
That's how it gets confirmed.
And I'm, like, talking to him about something about this, right? And I'm like, there's got to be an off switch somewhere. But I can't, like, there's times where I can't find it. And it's a healthy amount of it, right? Because it's not like, you know, I still obviously have fun and I live my life. I have a girlfriend. I have a social life, all that stuff, right? So I apply that into my everyday life.
Right.
But this right here,
yeah,
bro, all the time.
Yeah. And there's, I'd say there's a way to harness that in a direction that is, like, helpful and you're, when you're creating, that's always, you always feel like that's moving in a forward direction. It's not, that's not like a stagnant energy that's like sitting inside you and just like kind of a wheel spinning inside you. You have like a way to put things out. And I find that that frees up space so that like that feels less like a wheel that's always spinning and more like, oh, I'm happy it's spinning because that means more ideas, more things are happening.
True.
You just need to find outlets. So to me, for you, that's doing an episode because you're getting that out there. So like, I resonate with that for sure.
Yeah, no, definitely.
That resonates with me.
What's been the, I guess, like outside of finances and just like the business side, like what's been the biggest challenge since you started this, right? Obviously, you launched this, you've hosted a couple of events here, at least a event here that I saw.
Yeah.
But what's kind of like been the biggest challenge or obstacle that you've come across?
In this space, the biggest challenges is not being able to decide on how I like things to be set up, to be honest, because I've moved things around
all the time.
I've painted the floor black and then I repainted it white. Like I've just kind of like, I believe in curation, you know, I believe that things need to be presented in a certain way for them to be, for you to feel the energy that you say you feel when you come in here.
Yeah.
That can't just be me hanging a couple paintings up here.
No,
like there needs
to be a
thought, a vision behind it. So I really respect like interior design and architecture. And like, I want whatever my business is, I want it to lean into those kinds of things because I think it'll make my art, it'll elevate my art and it'll make the ultimate product, which is the art, better and stronger and tighter and sharper. So
100%.
I'm leaning into that, but it's hard with an industrial space, you know, and I love the space. I love what we've been able to accomplish here, but the vision is bigger. The vision is like this extended out into much larger spaces and experiences and immersion and Web3 and Meta. And
oh, nice.
Like, yeah. This thing is moving in a direction that's bigger for sure.
Nice.
And not just for the sake of being bigger, but
as we grow,
like the scale and the things that we could do gets bigger and better. So
the only
ceiling we put is the ceilings that we put on ourselves, essentially. I've made it a habit to not put a ceiling on the dreams. Yeah. So
that's the dream as big as possible, and wherever it takes you is where it takes you. That's something that I've learned. I'm like, you always kind of like, because you put the limitation on yourself, it's like, yeah, I can open an art studio, and then you open an art studio and you're like, okay, I opened the art studio now. I can do a lot more than this, right? Because you show yourself along the way that you're more than capable of doing it.
100%.
But we almost put that, for whatever reason, we put that kind of cap on it. And there really is no cap. No, I remember a podcast that I did years ago. And for whatever reason, like, this statement always has resonated with me. And I'd made it to the point of the guest that I was on. And it was like, humans are capable of some crazy shit. Because think about the fact that we can put a plane in the sky with 200 plus people and get them from place to place. Think about right now, that seems normal, right? But when that was created, that was like the most outlandish thing in the world to be even thought about, right? Yeah. And then it evolved and they flew a plane, right? And then the plane was like, okay, we could fly a plane and it can get us from this city to that city right there. Now we can fly a plane over the ocean and we can fly it with bedrooms in it and this and that, and it has 200 people in it, right? And it's like, someone had to think about that as an even idea, because it didn't exist, right?
Somebody was explaining, some like artist engineer was explaining some crazy vision back like 20 years before those things were executed.
It becomes the thought of something that doesn't even physically, tangibly exist.
So I talk about this a lot too, because this place existed in my mind, solidified in the my mind in some capacity. Like a long time ago, like I knew this place existed. I knew what I wanted it to look like.
Yeah.
And at first, when you explain that vision, you get some crazy, weird looks and it doesn't get it. Like now that we're here, it makes sense. Like, you guys got so lucky you found this place. And I'm like, yeah, it was. There was some luck involved in like how it all worked out. But I was looking for it. You know, I was like, it was like, and you're looking, see it, get it, like execute on it. And we looked for a long time. So it's.
The vision is even bigger.
So it's been good.
So kind of before we wrap up, what is next for you as an artist, for you as a business? I know you talked about 786 Studios.
Yes.
So what is the vision?
There are multiple buckets, like I said, where the vision is growing in, and all the buckets are growing, all the areas are growing. Mm-hmm. I'd say if I had to like categorize them, the design by Adrian Lorenzo is all the art stuff, all everything like art and brand and like products that are about to come out. Like that will always grow at a certain pace, especially as it relates to merch and apparel and stuff. That's like very much on the horizon here soon, as well as more, like I said, Web3 and Oculus and VR related connected like art. Ventures that those are really interesting moving forward, but then there's also general creative ventures. Like we've started to discuss more visual content creation, you know, long form and short form, scripted and unscripted, which I've been introduced to this world of TV and movies and acting, and how this like really as a result of this space, like having a space has provided a place for people to congregate and talk ideas and like generate ideas and back and forth, and things have resulted as a result of those conversations, including like one of the first ones you were
in here early,
a lot of things and visits like that have led to other interesting ventures outside of the paintings.
Right.
So like I still consider that art, you know, but now it's like writing and cinema and documentary and podcasting, right? Like this is now the third episode of a podcast I think we've recorded in here. We're going to have a podcast studio up there. Yeah. Soon, that's what we're going to call it, 786 Studios. So everything is 305 here, but I always had a 786 phone number. So shout out to everybody who had a 786 phone number.
We did an episode about that.
But so that's what this, the place, the physical location is. And I want, you know, to develop other creative concepts here and people to create content, shoot content in here, video editors and stuff house in here. Just had another artist, Victor Gosa, move in.
Okay.
And we're kind of sharing the space here as well. So that's for Design by Adrian Lorenzo. 786 Studios is our kind of general creative outlet studio, content creation, like I said. And then I continue to do a lot of things in the baseball space. Like I have a private consulting company, or it started as a private consulting company, and it's grown into it's like a general baseball operations company. Baseball operations outside of the current structures of baseball operations. And it's recently taken up a lot of my time too, but that's more private, you know, right. One-off with different entities kind of relationship. But that's been blossoming as well in a way that I didn't expect. And doing stuff like this on a more regular basis has been fun, man.
Cool, it's man.
A lot that's of growth cool. right now, yeah.
It's cool, it's exciting. I think that's always thank the biggest you. Thing. I think you could see the passion, obviously, yeah, and I think you. That's always very, very important. And it's gonna allow you to keep going. You know, when things aren't going well, right? You gotta kind of dig deeper sometimes and find, like something that someone told me was like, always keep the why very close
sure.
to you, right?
For sure.
Because in times of confusion and in times of doubt,
yeah.
the why is gonna be the reason why you either yeah. do it or you don't do it, right? And it's okay if they're like, you know what? This is why I was doing it, but you know yeah. what? The why doesn't mean much to me anymore.
Yeah.
And you could shut it down, and that's yeah. fine. And you might have another why in your yeah. next season of life, right? But when you are kind of like at a crossroad, always remember why you're doing what you're yeah. doing, and it'll keep you going.
Yeah, and my why is like in front of me all the time between like Amanda, between my wife, mm-hmm. and now we have a little girl coming, yeah. and like that has it's like,
powerful.
It's triggered... Like, I'd argue I was going in this direction for a while before that, but, like, once that happened, once I found out I was going to be a dad, it was, like, things went into this, like,
yeah.
exponential overdrive that I'm, like, I'm riding that momentum now, and I want to keep that going 100%. So that when she does get here, she gets in here in this time of, like, growth and building and excitement and all that. So it's, like, that shit will inspire you like nothing else in my experience so far. So
well, I can only imagine. Hyped. I haven't been there yet, but I can imagine.
I hope that one day soon for you.
One day. So before we wrap it up, we're going to do a quick little rapid-fire question.
Okay.
It's brought to you by Curaleaf. And the first question I want to ask you is, if you had to pick one person to go to dinner with, who would that be?
My wife. Yeah, that's my dinner partner for sure.
Good answer. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, that's it's true. Good. She yeah. happens to be standing there, but it's true.
I like that. That's a good answer. Are you a beach or mountains guy?
Beach.
Beach.
A combination of beach and mountains. When I went to California.
It's always a tougher answer than people. People seem very quick to answer, and then they're like, I kind of like both.
Well, California did that nice blend of, you know, mountainside
true.
And beach.
You get a little
and
bit
when
of
I went to Hawaii, like those. So
Hawaii.
Beach for sure, if it had to be a binary decision.
Yeah. Hawaii's elite. And then outside of baseball, what's your go-to sport?
Basketball for sure. Yeah, like I've actually always, I say this all the time, I enjoyed playing basketball so much more than I ever like enjoyed baseball. I liked baseball, I liked it fine, but I was a left-handed thrower. So like, I always wanted to play shortstop, but I couldn't, they didn't let me play shortstop.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to play first base so I could be in the infield, but mm-hmm. I ran, so I was fast. They're like, oh, that's the position for the power hitter, so you gotta go mm-hmm. to the outfield. So I would sit out in the outfield like, and I always, like, when I played basketball, you're, like, in it the whole time.
100%.
You know, I remember that action, like, and so now, like, I love the Heat for me, or, like, that's my, you know.
Yeah.
I love the Dolphins, too, and I love football
yeah,
as well,
yeah.
but, like, basketball to me is what comes next after that, for sure.
Sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, all right, man. Well, I appreciate the time.
I appreciate you, man.
I
like what you guys
today.
Are doing here, man. I really do. I think it's cool
it.
To put yourselves out there and to, like, have interesting conversations with people who you
yeah.
want to, like,
yeah,
have conversations with. It's,
the mantra
it's cool.
when I always, you know, try to have these conversations is obviously stay tranquilo, but it's deeper than that, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I always try to look at it in the perspective of the lens of like what my journey's been so far, right? And always keeping that close to me. I think the words play a lot of different meanings in my life,
yeah.
you know, through the different things that I've dealt with in my young life, but people are always looking for perspective. People are always looking for stories. People are always looking for answers, right? And they can come in a lot of different ways. So if it can resonate with a few people and they hear your story, you know, and their story is different than the other person I might have interviewed, but they resonated with yours, that's enough to kind of shift that perspective that maybe they weren't thinking about it that way. So that's always why I always enjoy these, and I don't think I'll ever stop doing this.
Yeah, well, from my point of view, I can say that, first of all, it's very much appreciated, and the spotlight, you know, just the recognition is the word, but mm-hmm. it's more like validation and more like you're helping maybe somebody see the art that is in your circle that might not have otherwise like even like peeked into it. It might be, ideally, it's a kid that gets triggered to do abstract art because nobody ever tells you to do abstract art.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's not a thing that you go to. It's very rarely do you get, you know, and maybe somebody gets triggered to like go down that path, and that would be an optimal scenario. But it's, you know, the episode with Vic Garcia, who's become a friend, and I like, he's a homie. I love his stuff. I love mm-hmm. his art. I actually have some of his merch back there. Mm-hmm. We collabed on a truck at the Coconut Grove Art Festival. It was cool.
Yeah.
But like, you know, watching that episode on your podcast of his stuff or the content, it was a cool portal into his world, you know, a cool window into his world and that little Vic Garcia world. And that's inspiring too, you know? So like,
that's cool.
You're highlighting cool local stories, and I'm honored to be a part of that. So
yeah,
thank
100%.
You. 100%. Yeah.
I think our cross paths for a reason. I always think things don't happen by mistake. So
cool.
I'm glad we got to do it. And I think the timing was perfect. So
awesome, man.
Yeah, man. Appreciate it. All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in. You can find them at Design by Adrian. A lot of exciting things coming down the pipeline. So we're excited to see it, man.
Awesome, man. Cool. Thank you.
Cheers. Later, guys.